Yes. Evening, everybody. Don't know whether we all know each other, I guess, but before I start, emergency evacuation procedure. Do we all know the way out in case of a fire and so on and so forth? We all covered? We've all been here before, haven't we? Good. Apologies for absence. Have we got any apologies?
Apologies from Councillor Keel.
Minutes of the meeting held on the 27th of July 2017. There is a question that I've got, and I don't know whether it's my memory, and I don't know whether you've had a chance to look into it at all, Simon, is item 30 on page 5. Was, I think, a separate meeting. I don't think it was part of the audit meeting. I think it was part of a special scrutiny.
I've had a look, and both sets of business were on the same agenda, so we could separate the minutes using an audit items and a scrutiny items heading or something similar, so that the scrutiny business is clearly separate from the audit business.
I think that would be helpful. I think it also is something ought to go on the website, because I'm not even sure. I don't know whether that special meeting ever went on the website.
I know the business would definitely have gone on to the website.
Yes.
But again, we can check how it's labelled on the website to make it clear that that was scrutiny business and not audit business.
That's my point. If somebody's wanting to follow it through as scrutiny business, they probably wouldn't spend their time going through the audit minutes. Other than that, if that can be made clear, I'd move the minutes as amended. I have a seconder, please. Thank you, Bob. Those in favour?
That's 5 votes for and 1 abstention.
Thank you, Simon. Urgent business. I have no urgent business, but I will say that with some trepidation. I look round. Has anybody else got anything that they wish to be raised in a matter of urgency? No? That's good. Declarations of interest. Declarations of interest from anybody, please. Sorry.
I just wondered whether you wanted me to get back in touch with the these blooming acronyms.
Working group.
No. The forgotten blooming acronym for it anyway.
Local Government Association.
Yes, LGA. That's it. That's the one.
I think so. That's outside of this meeting, because that's the scrutiny. We're back to the same question as we had earlier. But with my hat on as the chair of that working party, yes, please.
You would like me to get back into it?
I'd like you just to keep in touch, because we're still looking for somebody to act as a consultant.
I'll just say that I'm keeping him in mind then.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Declarations of interest I've covered. Nobody had any? No. Update of the internal audit charter that was the highlight of the last meeting. We hear an update of the update, please, Pete.
Thanks, Chair. As you've alluded to, this was an item that came to the last meeting of Audit Committee. And was deferred to this meeting because the track changes on the document hadn't come through. Embarrassingly, I have to inform you that they haven't come through on this agenda either, but we did send out a Word document with track changes out on Monday for all members, and hopefully you received that. In terms of the changes to the charter, I would say 75% of the changes are really about just changing my job title. There are some other changes which only add to the charter and expand on and give clarity to the charter. So I'm happy to take any questions if members have got any.
Bob?
Just a quick one about including the name of a company in that charter. Wouldn't it be better for that charter to be generic? Using the word Verito in it, doesn't that mean it has to be changed every time we change an auditor?
It would be a track change issue again. I don't see it as a big issue. The document comes from a national document anyway, and Verito add their name into that document. I don't think it's a big issue, but I'm happy to.
The rebellious non-chairing approach appeals to me on the basis that it would keep the present incumbent on their toes if they saw it changed from their name to a generic one. But I think I'll accept Pete's approach that we'll leave it as it is, unless you want to press it further. Any other questions? Right, can I go back to the recommendation, and that is the committee approved the changes to the council's internal audit charter. Anybody wish to say anything on that? Is it seconded? Have I got a seconder for those changes? Thank you, Bob. Anybody want to say anything on it? Or can we approve them? Those in favour?
That's carried unanimously.
I can't turn back to the agenda. The 151 officer is writing wildly. Next, external audit report, KPMG. Which of you three is going to? You two are going to. You're not getting a part. No, that's most disappointing. Yes, please, Ashbrook.
Local audits and accountability acts gives us wider powers such as raising issue of public interest. Matt's going to take you through the details of the work that we've done on the financial statements audit and kind of go through the report, and I'll then return and cover off the value for money and a few of the other requirements in terms of our presentation.
Yeah, okay, thanks Rash. I think the headline message is that from the draft accounts there's been no need to make any material adjustments to the draft accounts that Mandy and team have produced, which is good news from that side. There is no unadjusted misstatements, so there's nothing that we've found that they're unwilling to change. So I think that's really good for your assurance. And there's been a small number of presentational adjustments to the initial draft accounts, but nothing of any significance that we need to draw to your attention. So I think that's all real good news. Within the audit plan that we submitted back in January and February, there was a significant risk over the local government pension scheme triennial review. It's one that was across all councils, so it's nothing specific to Rydale, but it was around the fact that triennial review would set the benchmark and the funding and the accounting entries for the next 3 years. So there was a piece of work done alongside North Yorkshire Pension Fund and the actuaries to make sure that their actuaries' assumptions were reasonable. So we've done a piece of work with our experts to make sure that they're all sitting in the right sorts of boxes. So we can give you assurance that there's no issues to report on that for the full applicable pension scheme. There is two risks that we have to identify as part of our audits. And one is fraud and revenue recognition, and the other is management override controls. The fraud in revenue recognition for local authority, because the majority of the money comes from grants, it's not actually that risk gets rebutted.
Excuse me, Matt. I don't think you're into a speaker.
Okay.
That's my fault. So your words of wisdom may have been missed from the eternal record.
That would be a travesty, wouldn't it? I know.
I don't know whether we're going to be able to survive with that. But if you're happy with missing that bit, then we won't go back to the beginning again.
No, I'm more than happy for it to be missing.
Pardon?
There'll be some deja vu there.
Yeah.
So if you're comfortable with that, we're not diverting away from
anything. There's no problems with that, is
there? Yeah. Okay, so the fraud in revenue recognition is rebutted at the start of the audit, so there's no issues there. The other one of management override, we do a number of audit procedures around the journals, around the judgments that the authority make in certain entries, and we have no issues in terms of those that we're making. In fact, on page 29, we've identified a number of the judgments that are in the accounts, and as you see, we've put them as balanced. So there's really no concerns over those judgments that have been made. So we also had an area of focus, which is the revised funding statement at the beginning of the accounts, which you'll see in the accounts. What this is trying to do is to move away from what was known as CERCOP headings, which is service expenditure headings, and putting it actually into the reporting under the internal functions of authorities. Interestingly, for Rydale, I think you'd gone the other way, which is reported in the line of how CERCOP did it. So there was actually no or little change to your financial statement this year. So again, there was no issues there to report. So overall, the final bit we'd sort of like to touch on is the accounts and process, which I think went from our point of view well. Everything was in on time. The working papers were good. The responsiveness of Peter and Mandy's team was excellent, and I'd like to thank from Tom and our team, I'd like to thank them formally and have that recorded. I think the one issue I'd like to raise, and I think we just for the committee's view, is that next year the timetable moves back a month. So the close down period will be tighter. So I will work with Peter and Mandy to see if we can come up with some ways of reducing the impacts and that workload at the year end. So I think that summarises the financial statement element, and if I pass back to Rash for the value for money section.
Thanks, Matt. So over onto page 34 onwards of the report. Page 36 provides a nice summary of our value for money work in terms of what does it cover. And it's, like I indicated at the beginning, it's very much looking at your arrangements. So the key lines of inquiry there are around informed decision making, working with partners and third parties, and sustainable resource deployment. Now, how we do that is stipulated by, how we undertake the work is stipulated by the National Audit Office's code. And the key part is there we do a risk assessment. So when we undertook our risk assessment at the beginning of the audit and reported that to you in the audit plan, we didn't identify any significant risk. What we have done as part of our audit is we've revisited that, and what we've tried to bring to your attention is a couple of those areas of risk assessment. So we talk on page 38 around the peer review exercise that happened earlier this year. The peer review helped provide assurance to us that your core arrangements that are relevant for the for value for money are present and operating with the authority. Now, one of the things that we did notice from that is that there was some recommendations, and there was an action plan being developed around those recommendations, and we recognise that that's not been finalised yet. So, you know, clearly you've had a peer review, there's been an output from that. I think there's an issue about taking that forward and actually starting to implement those recommendations. There's nothing at this point in there that worries me that I'd have to qualify my VFM conclusion for any of the issues in there, but, you know, I thought I would flag that because that's one of the key areas of our risk assessment. The second area is financial resilience. I don't have to tell yourselves that increasingly you're under pressure in terms of finances. Local government has had a sustained period of funding reductions, and one of the key areas that we need to consider is look at financial resilience in the kind of under sustainable resource deployment, and that's something we continue to do, and I would imagine this would be a risk into future years. But again, our work there indicated you'd a financial strategy, you've got a plan in place to 2020. You have got a strategy, you've got the arrangements in place. It's about, for us, it's about monitoring that and seeing how you perform against that as well. So I thought I'd bring those two areas to light because I suspect that those will be features of our risk assessment going forward into next year. The report then concludes with a couple of appendices. Appendix 1 is our recommendations from the audit. The first one is a low priority recommendation regarding accruals identification. Not going to dwell on that. Our officers have accepted that, and we're happy with the response there. The second one relates to the response to the peer review, and I've talked about that already. We've also followed up prior year recommendations. There was only one recommendation last year, and we're happy that that's now been implemented. As Matt confirmed, Appendix 3 just confirms that there's no unadjusted or adjusted audit differences. Appendix 4 is something I'm required to do, is to confirm our materiality to the audit when we undertook the plan. We said what our materiality was. This simply confirms that that's still the case. And Appendix 5 is really about our objectivity and independence. You know, you're receiving a report from us today that gives you assurance of the accounts. You need to be assured about our independence. So it just goes into a little bit of detail how we ensure independence, and it's something that we continually consider through the audit. Examples of this are, you know, we look at our relationships with the organisation. So I can only do this role for a certain period of time, as can Matt. We look at, is there any other personal interests or anything like that. If you're a large company, we'd make sure, you know, nobody in the audit team would have shares in your organisation. So, you know, different for yourself, because that doesn't apply. But we do look at other relationships. We also look at our fee relationship, and I'll just confirm that we don't charge. We haven't charged Rydale for any non-audit services. All our fees relate to the audit service, and those fees are confirmed in Appendix 6, which detail that our fees are in line with the planned fees set out by public sector audit appointments in terms of the accounts and the housing benefits work. That concludes our presentation. More than happy to take any questions.
Any questions? You know, I ought to be trying to sell some questions. Janet.
Sorry, can I just ask something? On page 29, on this...
page, tell me what
pensions,
page.
Pensions.
Yeah.
For 31st of March 2017, estimate of increased liability was 1.4 million and it's gone to 19.8 million. Is that... right, or is it a misprint? Seems to be a very strange jump.
So if we, yeah, I mean, pensions, the pensions liability for the authority is basically the difference between the assets and the liability. So basically, you've got a net liability there. So you have all officers and officers in the past have contributed the pension scheme, as has the authority. Those build up assets which sit in North Yorkshire Pension Fund, but all the people that are working for the Rydale, have worked in the past for Rydale, will receive a pension from that pension scheme. What the actuary does is makes various assumptions around mortality rates of the likely end salary of people, because that will dictate their final salary and their final pension as well, and those are all calculated by a great big model which the actuary looks at, and we look at the data going into the model, and that pumps out with a figure. So yes, we've seen deficits increase across all pension funds nationally, in terms of, so I was sat at a big metropolitan district council, metropolitan authority, with a deficit of £350 million yesterday. So this isn't uncommon. The local government pension scheme does have a liability around the country. But that the key view is that liability is not going to necessarily crystallise this year, next year. Steps are taken through the triennial valuation to look at the position, and then each year alter what authorities are doing in terms of contributions, contribution rates to that, like, to the pension funds.
Pete?
Just to add to that, Chair, North Yorkshire Pension Fund have got a plan to address the pension deficit. So they've got a 30-year plan they're working to, and that plan's reviewed, as Rasha said, every 30 years. And we're 6 years into that plan, and the plan's reviewed, as Rasha's already mentioned, every 3 years when the actuaries carry out the triennial valuation. And the other thing just to say is it is an accounting estimate, and it's based on financial assumptions, and as Rash already pointed out, mortality rate, for example, is one of those. I think in the current financial assumptions, it assumes all females will live till 93.6, and all males will live till the 90. But a one-year fluctuation in that figure, I think I worked out, would lead to a £2.2 million movement in that liability shortfall. So that there are some really big swings from very small movements in those assumptions. So we need to take that into account as well.
Anybody else? Janet.
After what Janet said, this isn't anything to do with the need to for the North Yorkshire pension pool, where we've all had to go into one big pot.
I was keeping quiet about that.
All right,
it's all going to change, isn't it, when the things are pooled? But I don't know how they're going to handle different pension plans systems. Do you know?
Yeah, I actually audit the North Yorkshire Pension Fund as well. I audit the North Yorkshire County Council.
Yeah, this won't cost us extra, this information, will it?
No, it's not cost, don't worry. But in terms of the pooling, this pooling is of the assets, so you'll still all have the separate pension fund scheme, so you'll all be past that. It's just how what the government's trying to do is trying to get more consistency in all pension schemes performing at a better rate, and the one of the rationales behind the pooling is if there's bigger pots of money, you'll get better returns and you'll also reduce transaction costs as well.
Thank you. Anybody else? One or two thoughts, and we'll have a couple of those and then come back. Just a quick glance at your comments in relation to the peer review, and instead of half comment and half question, one of the recommendations of the peer review is that we should follow the council's leadership, and the leadership, unfortunately, it's a little bit like a sort of Lewis Carroll story. The leadership turned out to be sort of a white rabbit, as it were, and disappeared down the rabbit hole with a third of the Conservative group with her. But fortunately, the rest of council didn't take the advice of the peer review and follow the leader. Now, that's one of the reasons why it has been delayed, because the concerns and frictions that were at... And I hope I'm saying this as apolitically as possible. The frictions that existed at full council were questions not being answered and so on, and have now moved to different frictions. Now, whether they're better or worse is a movable feast, and whether it was right or wrong or who was right and who was wrong before is irrelevant, but it has changed a lot. And on the basis it's changed a lot, it seemed sensible not to start reviewing where we were when we as council, or I suspect officers, didn't know where we were at that point, let alone reviewing it. So I think that's a sentence, rather a question, that needs sort of bearing in mind along with that. You say on page 19 of the report, Rash, under significant value for money risks, you refer to the T2020 programme, and you say the current position is identified in the 2020 and has been delivered and a surplus produced. Now, the alleged savings have been delivered, but did you look at the cost of that delivery? Because the delivery was brandished at 1.3 million, I think, annual savings, but it struck some of us that the cost of making that number of people redundant seemed a little over the top. And I wondered if in value, you brought it up under the value for money section, so did you think it was value for money, or are you going along with the view that it's done as well as it said it would?
What we don't do is we don't comment around policy, but application of policy.
I'm not asking policy.
But what we're comfortable is that you've got a medium-term financial strategy, effectively, that charts what your position is, and we can see that you plan to make some savings and you made some savings in terms of revenue. Now, clearly, there's a capital cost to some of those revenues, to some of those revenue savings. But again, we're comfortable that those are being accounted for and treated properly and dealt with from a value for money perspective appropriately as well. And it's not something that's unusual to yourselves as a local authority. We see these type of savings being generated and being identified and delivered at other local authorities as well.
I wasn't questioning the whether money had been spent inappropriately or appropriately, and I certainly wasn't questioning the principle of you have to invest to save. I was questioning the fact that you'd put it under value for money and was wondering how you'd worked out what value it was to the council for what money.
I take your point. I think the confusion there is, under the framework that we operate, and going back to page 36 of the reporting pack, is value for money. We call it a value for money conclusion, and that's what the National Audit Office calls it, but it's probably not a value for money conclusion because we have to look at certain parameters. So we're not assessing how you spend every penny in terms of value for money. What we're doing there is looking to see if you've got arrangements, and the arrangements that we're looking at are the arrangements set by the National Audit Office Code. So, you know, and that's why there's a little bit of explanation around what we're trying to do there. So there's, in terms of how we looked at what you're saying in terms of that level of detail, the answer would be no, but we're not required to. Okay.
And I think your sentence in the middle of there, that under value for money, we weren't looking at value for money, I think covers it perfectly. I understand you're given guidelines from above to deliver, but some of us have been questioning value for money, and that's what raised that question there. Okay. And the final point, talking of value for money, on page 27 of your report, the second paragraph, audit fees, you say the one that works our work on certification of housing benefits, etc., for October 2017 will be $11,484. Can we hold you to that figure?
The correct figure.
I saw where your mistake had come from, but I just wondered if you were going to give us several hundred pounds discount on it, or whether I'd misread it. No problem at all. Any further questions from anybody? Bob?
On page 29 or 9, depending on what you're reading, all those threes, is that routine to get it nicely balanced like that? Is that what you see everywhere, or is there a good sign, or how would you report all those threes?
Okay. I mean, it's a good sign that your judgments or officers' judgments in terms of the key accounting issues are balanced, but in places, you know, sometimes we do see those differences. So on the pensions one, if... let's say if the authority had used lower mortality rates than what we were expecting in terms of what our actuaries were expecting, we would be saying the authority's been quite optimistic, and that's because they were trying to reduce the liability. So actually, so when we've looked at it, we compare these to guidance. So the pensions we compare to our actuaries' guidance. So the council's actuaries, or North Yorkshire Pension Fund's actuaries, are in line with our actuaries. The valuations we compare to something called Gerald Eve report, and again the assumptions used in the valuations are in the middle. So if they were to differ, we would report them, but our reviews and testing of those this year has indicated they're quite balanced.
Thank you, Rash. Any more? No, it's a very thorough, as I would expect, report, and as well with good reports, there aren't a lot of questions to follow from. Either of you, any further comments you wish to add?
I think just, I know Matt's mentioned it, but again, an audit can only run smoothly if you get cooperation from the other side. So we had very good cooperation from officers during the audit. I think that's going to be really important because next year you've got to produce a set of accounts 2 months, sorry, 1 month earlier. We've got to audit it 2 months earlier. So we will be planning what we'll be, we have a debrief planned with officers, and we will be signalling the work that we'll be liking, we'll be wanting to do earlier next year, because that's the only way we're going to meet that deadline next year. But I've got every confidence that we've got a good working relationship, and we should be able to do that.
Can I, as chair, on behalf of the committee, thank Mandy and Pete for the work they've done this year to get it to the stage that they are, and wish them good luck with next year. Because if you've got to get done 2 months earlier, and I thought it was only 1 month earlier, and when there was a squeeze of a month, I thought it was the same month. No, you've got your own special month. That is interesting information. But that puts additional pressure on them, because not only have you got to get done a month earlier, you've also got to get to this stage 2 months earlier. Is there anything that the council could do in terms of alleviating that, as in the time up to the deadline, that Pete isn't going to complain bitterly at as a suggestion?
And that's why we've planned a debrief. We've got a debrief planned to say, from our side, this went really well, and also to learn from the officer's side, or what could we do differently? And also, you know, this is an this is impacting on a lot of our clients, a lot of our local, well, all of our local government clients. So we've got a national project going on about what work we'll be doing earlier. So there will be things Pete and Mandy and their teams will be able to do, but we're yet to discuss all the full details of that. But that's very much next on the schedule once we get these signed off.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Pete, Mandy, Rash and Matt, all of you, for getting to this stage, and good luck with next year. I take it the government's given no reason why it should be done at this indecent haste.
There's a paper explaining the benefits of...
That wasn't quite the question I asked.
There's increased transparency, getting it out of the way so you can concentrate on the future years. So there's an accountability. This should help you and individuals in terms of users of the accounts hold the authority to account. And if it's done closer to the year end, that's better as well.
Yes, I'm convinced. Yes. Thank you both. Are you staying for the... That would be nice. Right. Statement of the accounts. Do we have to do anything with the audit? Sorry. Do we have to recommend it to anyone?
No. It's going with a covering report to PNR.
It's going to PNR with a covering report, so we don't need to approve it or anything.
Just scrutiny.
Right. Statement of accounts. Is this you, Mandy? No. Pete.
Mandy's with us this evening for backup. If you ask any complicated detailed questions, then hopefully we've got someone to call on. We'll see how we go.
So you get the work and not the limelight then? Yeah.
I'll try and keep this brief. It's a 98-page document, I think, so I don't intend to go through it in great detail. Just try and pick out the salient points, some of which we've already covered, particularly in terms of the pension fund. So the accounts highlight a positive financial position for the council in 16-17, leading to a net increase in usable reserves of £2.8 million. Matthew's already talked about the new statement within the accounts, the expenditure and funding analysis. That's on page 60 of the agenda. And he's talked about why we've brought that in, and it's also aimed at helping to make the accounts more understandable. And I personally do like it. I think we can expand on that in future years. The first column in each year within the statement ties back to the usable reserves position, which I've just mentioned at 2.8 million, something that we've not really been able to highlight within the statement of the accounts in the past. Within the narrative report on page 54 of the agenda, reference is made to a £1.258 million budget surplus for the year. And I've tabled for members a final outturn budget monitoring report, which was presented to Resources Working Party at the beginning of September. This report highlights the main variances during the year which make up the budget surplus. And as was the case last year, the biggest underspend has been on salaries, which isn't unexpected as we prepared ourselves to deliver over £1 million of budget savings for the current financial year. The budget surplus has been transferred to General Fund earmark reserves. In doing so, I've reversed the budget contribution from the new homes bonus reserve to support the revenue budget, just over £300,000, and the balance has been transferred into the general reserve, and I would hope to bring a report on the use of reserves to the next Policy and Resources Committee. In terms of the capital programme, we saw continued high demand for on-disabled facilities grants and continued with the programme of IT infrastructure works approved by the Council 3 years ago now. Still got a borrowing requirement, but we didn't undertake any further approved borrowing during the year. We discussed this at the last meeting, I think, on when we looked at Treasury management. So we still got £320,000 potentially to borrow to fund the current capital programme. But I think that's something that I'll also bring up when I bring a reserves report to Policy and Resources Committee. So as a billing authority, the Council operates a collection fund on an agency basis, which records the transactions relating to council tax and business rates. 16-17 was the fourth year of the new business rate. I'm calling it new, it's 4 years now, the business rates retention scheme. And it's the third year of our participation in the North Yorkshire business rates pool. So in real terms, Rydell's share of business rates income ended the year approximately £200,000 below the budgeted level. However, because of the regulations affecting business rates, the impact of this deficit will impact on future years' accounts. And in preparing this year's accounts, we've set aside an amount of money to mitigate that deficit in the future in the Collection Fund Equalisation Reserve. The level and value of outstanding appeals continues to be an issue, and there is still a risk that successful appeals could have a higher financial impact on the Collection Fund than we've provided for in the accounts. But on a positive note, once again, third year in a row, the Council benefited from membership of the North Yorkshire Business Rates Pool. This year, the benefit was £135,000, so that's increased every year over the last 3 years. £65,000 in the first year, £120,000 in year two, and £135,000 in 16-17. So in terms of the balance sheet, we've undertaken a partial revaluation of the Council's assets in 16-17. Now, investment properties and surplus assets are revalued. We're required to revalue them on an annual basis. We've also this year started a rolling programme of revaluations for the other assets. So there is a requirement for us to revalue assets every 5 years, and that's what we've done. We've done a full revaluation every year. We started a rolling programme to do a fifth of the assets every year now. This year we looked at revaluing car parks, and as a result of all those valuations, long-term assets have shown a net increase of £800,000 year on year. I did have a lot to say about pension liability, but I think actually we've covered all those issues now. And I've already discussed one of the movements in earmark usable reserves, the money that I've transferred, the budget surplus that I've transferred into the general reserve. Now, there is a full explanation, which I think goes into quite a lot of detail, on all the movements and the purpose of the reserves, and that can be found on page 88 and 89 of the agenda at note 10. The annual governance statement was approved for inclusion within the statement of accounts at the last meeting of this committee, with one amendment which we've picked up in terms of the annual governance statement action plan. And that document, the action plan, is on page 129 of the agenda. So tomorrow P&R will be asked to approve the statement of accounts and also the management representation letter, which starts at page 145 of the agenda. So I'm happy to take any... I've got no specific concerns in terms of last year's accounts, and I'm happy to take any questions you might have.
Any questions, anybody? This has produced less excitement than audit. No questions at all? Do you want to put him on the spot, Mandy, and ask a awkward question? No, okay.
No, please don't.
No. Nothing at all. They're saving it up for P&R, I reckon.
Probably so.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anybody want to add anything at all? Silence. Well, you've got to just hope that silence means agreement then, haven't you? Yeah. Right, I don't think there's any other items for the agenda other than urgent items that which we haven't got any. On that basis, I declare the meeting closed. Thank you all for attending.
And you didn't stick to your timetable, did you?
What timetable?